There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening. This is Dave Schrader, your host on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. With me, as always, my co-host Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening.
Well, I just want to start off the show real quick before we get into this evening's Werewolves and Demons show with Mr. John Zaffis and Linda Godfrey. I had an amazing experience, first-hand experience this last couple of days.
No need to compliment me. It was nothing.
Oh, shut up. Went out to Washington, to Trout Lake, Washington. Mr. James Gilliland, who was a guest we had on the show way back in the beginning, talking about UFOs, gave me an open invitation that if I ever find my way out that way, that he'd like to have me out on his ranch and see the UFOs for myself. So, of course, being the skeptical kind of guy I am about UFOs, I went out there to take a look. And all I can say, Tim, life is a lot different for me today than it was a week ago.
The anal probes are a little enjoyable.
Yes, they are. No, I saw stuff there, my friend. I don't even know how to wrap my head around it. We're going to be having James on in about 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to talk about the things that we actually saw at the ranch, talk about the different experiences. It was amazing. I will say this. I saw a creature with my own eyes, and I saw actual UFOs, and one or two of them seem to be communicating with us. I don't know. This type of thing changes you. It's crazy. I always thought people were nuts for saying that. But now that you see this stuff out there and you can see it firsthand, almost like seeing the Holy Grail and seeing a full body apparition, until you see it, there's just nothing to compare. And right now I am still just in this utter sense and stage of shock and awe, if you will. But we'll be talking to James Gilliland in a couple of weeks. Met a lovely family from Alabama, a couple of regular Washingtonians that were there. Experienced this with 8 other people, so it wasn't like I was just out there alone seeing this stuff. Just totally amazing. Tim, I wish you could have been there with us. We're definitely going to have to make a trip out there together and share this, maybe even do a live broadcast from the ranch, talking to people about the things that are going on in the skies above us.
What if the government jams it?
That'd be awesome. Well, we could fake that we're getting jammed off the radio. I don't know.
Nice.
This evening, originally we had slated, we're going to be talking about werewolves and witches with Halloween right around the corner. Unfortunately, no witches would talk to me before Halloween. They're a little busy, I guess, Tim. You know, this seems to be a busy time of year for witches.
Well, Dave, there's a run on candy at the store. You got to get everything ready for the little trick-or-treaters.
That's right.
And, you know, the witches got to brew up a little something for the kiddies.
So I couldn't get any respectable Wiccans to join us on the show this evening, so I had to go with the next best route and get me a respectable demonologist who's worked with werewolves and ghosts and demons. Oh, my. So we're going to introduce back to the show a friend of ours, Mr. John Zaffis. And John is a paranormal investigator. He's an author. He's a demonologist, a hell of a guy. He's been on the show with us in the past, and we've talked about many of the different cases that he's worked on. John mentioned and alluded to us a few weeks back when we had him on with Denise Jones that he, too, has been involved in a case involving lycanthropy. So we'd like to welcome back to the show this evening Mr. John Zaffis. John, thanks for joining us back in the darkness on the edge of town.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate having you back with us. Now, as I alluded, we wanted to talk about the different myths and monsters associated with this time of year. You know, we talked to Rosemary Ellen Guiley last week about voodoo, or about vampires. We had on Bloody Mary from New Orleans talking about voodoo. This week, we want to talk a little bit about demonology, get a little bit more in-depth with demonology and lycanthropy, and see if there is a connection between the two. And you alluded a few weeks ago to the fact that you actually worked on a possession case that had to do with lycanthropy, and that really piqued my interest, because I didn't realize that, I thought this was fair for, Hollywood. It was taking old Indian legends or a fraction of the truth and kind of spinning it. But now you've actually worked on a case. Now, is this a possession case of lycanthropy?
Yes, it is. What you have to remember is when you talk about these different things, I mean, you date back way far, our time range where it is alleged that our physical body can take on animal spirit. Now, when you look at these things and you try to document these things and understand their occurrences and the way that they actually transpire, bottom line is it's what we refer to as possession.
Okay, so it's not as we've seen in the Hollywood films where, you know, David Naughton's dropping to the ground and his bones are stretching and muzzle stretching out and howling at the moon type of thing. It's more of a possessive spirit of an animal or strong animal spirit that has taken over a human being.
Yeah, well, if I see anybody drop to the floor and they grow a schnout and stuff like that, man, I want to be witness to that one because I've never seen anything like that.
So that isn't right. So you don't believe in the actual form of lycanthropy, or do you? That of the actual, because lycanthropy is actually changing, correct? I mean, the right definition of it is changing from one form to an animal form.
That is what the definition states. But from what I've researched, I've been involved with two cases that are supposed to be, you know, lycanthropy, and it's the characteristics are the same thing of a person that's under possession. Now, one case that I really got involved with my aunt and uncle several years back, the case of Bill Ramsey. Now, we know, you know, it's a typical story. It's Bill Ramsey lives in London, England, and he would go through these bouts of possession, if you will, and it would seem to happen around a full moon.
Okay.
And now this is documented. And supposedly when this occurred with him, especially towards the end of him having these problems, it would happen around the full moon, and they would actually lock him up.
Hmm. Now, who's they would lock him up? Was it his wife?
The police.
The police, really?
Or they call them constables out there, I believe.
What year was this taking place, John?
I'm trying to remember the exact year, Dave, and I honestly don't remember.
60s, 70s, 80s?
It was actually, I believe it was in the 90s.
Okay.
Or the 80s. It might have been the late 80s.
All right.
Okay, but the whole thing with it, I mean, it's just like something out of a Hollywood movie. Yes, I agree. The gentleman, Bill, supposedly went under full possession when it's a full moon, and that they would basically have to lock him up. And the story is told by a couple of the constables that he actually pulled the bars apart in the jail cell.
Wow.
And actually was able to get out.
So this...
Now, did I witness it? No, I wish I did. But, you know, we have to go by the documentation on some of those events that the people were, you know, relaying to us. Well, what ended up happening was that a newspaper sponsored Bill Ramsey to be able to come over here and have an exorcism by Bishop McKenna. And I was part of that and witness to basically him going under possession. I mean, I didn't see any hair come out on his body. I didn't see any of his ears grow or anything.
Okay.
But I will tell you, he gained an enormous amount of strength. He had the change with the eyes and the characteristics with that. And, you know, he did curl his hands up. And he did gain an enormous amount of strength. That did occur during the exorcism. But, you know, you have to remember, here again, it's a form of possession.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many different cultures believe that animal spirit can indeed enter a human body and actually take them over.
Well, let me ask you this, John. From the description you gave, now most possessions, I would guess, you're able to communicate with these spirits. Demonic possessions, they seem to like to taunt or talk or threaten and contact you in either their language or in different languages, correct?
Correct.
Now, when it's an animal spirit, I'm guessing it's more of a snarling, snapping, growling nature.
Well,
is that right?
I've seen both, Dave.
Okay.
You know, with possession cases, you're going to have a lot of the snarling. You'll have the hissing.
Right, so, but I mean with an animal possession, is it you don't get, you know, hello, I'm a wolf. I mean, they're not talking to you that way. It's more of the animalistic side coming out, correct?
Absolutely. The characteristics of it, yes.
Now, and I know you guys do a lot of research and check in this, especially having Bishop McKenna involved in these type of investigations for mental stability. But it sounds to me, from reading the books and literature that I've read, that a lot of misdiagnosed possessions occur, especially people that believe to be lycanthropes that they can change into animal form or are possessed by animal form are actually more of like a grand mal seizure, which is leaving them not so much growling or snarling. You know, my mother had a horrible seizure back in January of 1988 and fell to the ground, and her hands were clenched, and she was, you know, I mean, it was just this horrible animalistic sound coming from her. What differentiates what occurred to my mom to what occurred to the, you know, to this gentleman? What did he witness, or what did you witness or experience with him? Was he, you know, my mother was non-communicative. She was, you know, twisted up and snarling and frothing, if you will, and she's going to kill me for talking about this on the radio. You know, was this creature looking around the room, snapping at you, acting like a caged dog, or was it similar in actions to what occurred to my mother, who just suffered a massive seizure?
Well, I'm very familiar with seizures. Unfortunately, we have things in our family, too, and a younger one that has grand mal seizures, not any of my kids. But mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with the characteristics of that. And, yes, they do collapse. They fall. They do go into a fetal position. The hands do curl up. I've been witness to that. I mean, when you deal with a person...
And you agree that looks very animalistic, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
So
I couldn't agree more with you on that, on mm-hmm. that perspective of that. But now, did I see Bill or this other gentleman that had lycanthropy problems actually fall to the floor? No. I seen both of them. Actually, Bishop McKenna did both exorcisms
mm-hmm.
With both of these gentlemen that claimed they had lycanthropy animal spirit with them. I seen them react. I seen the look that came over them. Actually, both of them did react with the arms, with the fingers actually curling up.
Okay.
But now, can I differentiate that from other exorcisms? Not really, Dave.
Well, not from other exorcisms, but
type of characteristic.
Right, but I guess what I'm asking is when they were, perhaps they were seated or strapped to a chair, I don't know what their position was, or strapped to a bed when they were, you know, going through this possession case. So, you know, my mother was just walking down the hall and collapsed, and that's what happened to her. But what I'm asking, was there more interaction? You know, as you just explained, you have family members that go into seizures. There's no communicating. It's like if something's turned off inside and it's just, you know, a huffing, puffing shell. With somebody that's possessed with this lycanthropy, this gentleman that you were just talking about, was he appearing more animalistic and I mean, moving like he was aware? Again, as I said, when you're having a seizure, most people just, the eyes roll back in the head and they're huffing and snorting and snarling, but there's no actual, you know, feel that there's anybody, you know, it's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. With the possession case of lycanthropy, is there more of an interaction? Are they looking at you? Are they, you know, biting at you? That kind of stuff? I mean, what's going on?
Well,
I'm sorry, John. I just scared the hell out of Tim here growling at you.
I'm shaking.
Well, like I said, here again, in the two cases I've been involved with, I did not have any interreaction where they were trying to bite. No. The characteristics of tremendous amount of strength, yeah, they were strapped into chairs, both gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you did have thrashing. They were moving about. They were trying to break free because they were actually tied into the chairs, and they were in straitjackets.
Okay.
So that amount, yes, that does occur, the enormous amount of strength, yeah, but here again, the characteristics, when somebody does react when they are possessed, it doesn't matter which category it's in.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen people lash out where they will try to bite you, yes.
Sure.
So, I mean, that isn't a characteristic, I would just say, of lycanthropy, no.
Okay, all right. So this gentleman was being bothered enough that they were actually locking him up back in his home country on nights of a full moon. Was he, when he was turning into this, was he running the countryside naked, snapping and snarling at sheep, or jumping on, you know, damsels in distress? What was he doing that made him so, you know, I'm trying to get to the root of what we're talking about. What made him possessed by this? I mean, why did they lock him up? What was he doing that was harmful? Was he just harmful to himself, or was he harmful to others while he was in this state?
He was more restrained to himself. He tried to keep to himself. I do know there were a couple of occasions where he had gone out into the yard and allegedly he was howling.
Okay.
I did hear of a couple of characteristics with that. I do know that there were several occasions where he scared the hell out of his wife when he had gone under.
All right.
And she said that it was basically like characteristics of a animal. So therefore, I mean, you look at these different perspectives on the information that people is, you know, are sharing with you, that these events they go through with these individuals. Now, here again, too, do you have to rule out anything from a medical perspective? Absolutely.
How do you go about doing that? What goes on for a demonologist or an exorcist? What happens? Show some of the steps that happen before you're called in.
It depends. A lot of times we're called in, and we're the ones that have to make the recommendations that, you know, have you had a medical checkup lately? Have you been to a psychiatrist? Are you on any medications? I mean, these are questions that are asked beforehand, before I would even consider somebody to be possessed.
Right.
Or even oppressed.
Okay.
But, I mean, those are all things that are ruled out. But 90% of the time, a lot of individuals, especially today, if they're going to go forth and say that they got something happening on a paranormal level, they've already been to the doctors, they've been down the routes, they've been to psychiatrists. Might they have been diagnosed with something? Sure. But the fact of it is, when they start telling you they try different medications, the doctor's trying different things, and nothing is working, and the medical field is at a loss, that's something that I'll look at a little bit closer.
Now, are you familiar with Tourette's syndrome at all?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, you know, Tim and I worked extensively with Tourette's when we were in college. It was one of the deals that we used to raise funds for with our radio station that we were part of back in college days. And, you know, a lot of it, I shouldn't say a lot of it, but there are people who react that way as well, with the snarling and snapping and quick jerks and sudden bursts of strength. You know, when you've gone in to do these investigations, how often do you find yourself questioning during the actual possession or during the exorcism, yeah, I wonder if this is really just more of a medical condition than it is, or a mental condition than it is a possession?
Well, here again, Dave, something else I'm quite familiar with is Tourette's, and it's just something that's in the family. So I'm quite well aware of the characteristics of it, the diagnosis, the medication. And you got to remember, years ago, when a person had Tourette's, they would automatically assume that person was possessed.
Oh, sure. Okay.
You know, that was a very common thing before it was actually diagnosed, realizing that something in the brain was misfiring.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know, today we understand that. Now, Tourette's is a characteristic that it's spontaneous, and it usually occurs when the person is very excitable, or they're sitting and they're completely relaxed or start twitching, chirping, and making a lot of different noises. So, you know, here again, do you got to look at something from that perspective? Sure. But there are characteristic signs of Tourette's that usually follows a pattern where a person that could have, you know, something with them or possessed, it's not that spontaneous. It's usually something that's provoked within the individual. And usually when those occurrences take place, it's usually during the deliverance or with a exorcism that could be being performed at that point in time.
Okay. Now, we understand as well as we can that most demonic possessions and malevolent possessions that take place, you know, they've worked their way into a weaker person's personality or whatever it is to kind of gain control and make themselves known. What do you believe that an animal or a lycanthropy possession is? Is it an actual spirit of an animal, or is it a, I'm sorry, I'm at a loss for words right now. What you know, when the spirit never actually walked the earth in any form, there's a name for that too, and I apologize for blanking on it right now. But do you believe that it was at one time an earthbound animal, or do you believe it is just a malevolent creature?
What I actually believe that is transpiring with several of the cases, I have a couple of different theories that I look at this from, is that I've worked extensively with Native American. I've seen some of the traditions and some of the characteristics that come forth, Dave, and would I put it almost in the category of lycanthropy? A good possibility, where the spirit that inhabits this individual, is it something that's demonic that's never, you know, walk this earth. Good possibility. That's a very thin line in drawing the characteristics on whether it could be something demonic, an animal spirit. It depends on the interpretation. It depends on how you're perceiving what the individuals are actually going through. Now, the characteristics can be taken on in a possession case that will represent and show those characteristics of lycanthropy where you could say, gee, is that an animal spirit? Are we dealing with a demonic presence that's with this individual? What exactly are we dealing with?
Sure.
So when you're looking at this and, you know, the prayers are being done and the manifestations start coming forward within the individual that's being exorcised, basically what I'm saying is lycanthropy, possession by a demon, possession by several different entities could actually take place. Now, the characteristics, I believe, from lycanthropy have been blown out of proportion because, here again, I haven't really seen anybody have hair or their ears grow or, you know, have a snout come out. I mean, I wish I would see something like that because that would blow me out of the water.
Sure, exactly.
So, you know, I look at it from, you know, a realistic approach.
Okay.
That this person is possessed, and is it a possibility, Dave, that we could have, you know, animal spirit, human spirit, demonic entity all intertwined with an individual that could be possessed? It's a good possibility, yeah.
Good. Well, let's let people chew on that. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our guest this evening, Mr. John Zaffis.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the darkness on the edge of town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Mommy!
Leave me alone!
Do you have ghosts?
Do you have dreams?
Do you have an interest in the unknown?
Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para-Investigators, the 24/7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
If you read Casper Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
If it weren't for ghosts and aliens, these guys wouldn't be getting any action at all.
Yeah, baby!
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening. Thank you very much for joining us here on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Mr. John Zaffis. He's a paranormal investigator, a demonologist, worked on some amazing cases. And this evening we're speaking about lycanthropy, talking about werewolves and the possessions that have occurred. Quick question that kind of popped into mind when we were talking during the last segment, John. I don't know what your stand is on the belief or thoughts of reincarnation, but is there any chance that this could just be a past life trying to make itself known in this life when these possessions of animals are coming through?
Well, you have to remember there's certain cultures and religious belief systems that people do reincarnate from pets, or the human spirit or the soul can reincarnate into animals. I mean, that's a very, very strong belief system in several different cultures. How do I interpret that? Wow. you think about these different things, and the basis of most things is that we know things are formed around energy. People refer to the soul, energy, the spirit, can basically is all the same thing interpreted in different ways. And in different cultures and belief systems, can something transpire into someone else? I don't rule out reincarnation. There's no way I rule it out.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of different things that there's a good possibility with a lot of the information that people have and things that they've experienced. How in the world do they get the information and have it in this lifetime and it reflects back on something from many years ago? So it's something that I study. It's something I try to understand. And here again, I view myself as a paranormal investigator. I study all things that are unique, different, and I never rule anything out.
Well, you know, you brought up about the other cultures, and Anthony from our chat room had a quick question. He was wondering what you thought or what your beliefs were about the legends and stories of the Navajo skinwalkers.
Well, I don't think I'm that familiar with it.
Well, it's funny because Anthony posted all about it for us if we'd like to read it right now. Basically, the Navajo skinwalker is somebody that has a supernatural ability to change into an animal that he or she desires. But it said that the person doesn't have to be the rank of medicine man or woman. You know, probably make it a lot easier if they had that kind of power, but it has the ability to shape-shift and change into animal form. He was just wondering if you had done any research or information on that and what your thoughts were about the possibilities of that occurring.
Well, it's far-fetched.
Sure.
I'll definitely give that. I can't honestly say I've ever seen anybody transform into an animal in front of me. I've never seen it happen. I mean, it's something.
You should see my kids turn into pigs at dinner time.
Hey.
Especially when it's something they like.
That's right, exactly.
But I mean, you know, I've been around medicine men and shaman,
mm-hmm.
where I've been in a circle when they've been doing different things, and I've seen some really unique things conjured up, if you will, from different energies. I've seen forms, but I can't honestly say to this day that I've ever seen anything transform into an animal. But I will tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
During a couple of cases I've worked on, I've seen people take on the characteristics of an animal, and as far as getting down on all fours and going across the floor and snarling.
So you have seen that?
I have seen that, yes.
Now, were they fluid when they moved, or did it look like a human trying to run like an animal?
It looked like a human trying to run like an animal.
Okay, so it wasn't like they were transforming somewhat and still fluid
no.
motion. Okay.
No.
Well, let's go back to this case that we were talking about. So you're called in, and Bishop McKenna is called in to do this exorcism of this gentleman from England.
Yes.
So now it's an English werewolf in America, right? It's a sequel to John Landis's film. So he's here?
I agree with the Holland. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just like something out of the movies.
Okay, and he's brought in. You've got him bound and gagged and stuffed in a chair somewhere, and he's going through these different things. What exactly do you do to, you know, if it's in the name of Christ or whatever religion you believe in that you can cast out a demon, how do you cast out an animal?
Well,
throw a milk bone and hope he jumps for it or what?
That would be interesting. That would be real interesting. But basically what is done is when you're involved with this, regardless of a person's belief system, when certain things are done from any type of a religious perspective, there's a lot of power behind prayer.
Right.
And when different prayers are said and different things are done, it's amazing how things can and will come forth in a person that has something with them. Now, with different characteristics, you would think that if, you know, someone had an animal spirit in them, how would you bring something like that forth?
Right.
How would you make that come forth to be able to get it to leave the individual? But when it's done with a lot of religious prayer and different things that occur, there's something with the power of that that brings that forward. Here again, it leads me back to, yes, I've been involved with what I feel are the symptoms of lycanthropy-type cases, but the bottom line is possession, and it can take on the different characteristics. Many years ago, a lot of these types of situations got labeled, and one of them is lycanthropy. So therefore, you look at this from an open perspective, and you try to understand that this individual is going through these things,
sure,
and these things are happening, but yet when these rites are done by different types of clergy, it is able to help that individual, and it's able to remove that energy or spirit that's with them from them.
Now, when you're doing this, and we've talked to you in the past about the different hierarchies of demons and evil, malevolent spirits that are out there, right? So is there maybe just a better chance of this not being an animal spirit, but just being a super low-level demon just trying to make his way in, and it's snapping and snarling, and that's because that's all it knows how to do to communicate?
I would definitely agree with the fact that is it a possibility that we're dealing with a demon? Absolutely. Lower hierarchy? No, I would say it would be hierarchy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You would think that they would be more animalistic the higher up in ranking they are?
Yes, I would definitely say so.
Okay.
Due to the fact of some of the more intense type situations that I've been involved with as far as exorcism goes.
Sure.
You have to remember, when an individual is purely possessed,
mm-hmm,
and it's a legit type thing, you're going to have spirit, and you're going to have multiple. Very seldomly, when a person is possessed, it's just by one demon or one entity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually by multiples.
Now, a lot of
so
people... Go ahead.
So therefore, when we deal with these things, that's why a lot of times, Dave, when you'll hear that, you know, a person needed several exorcisms, it's almost like stripping away the layers,
sure,
to be able to get to the main source of what's actually causing the problems. So therefore, when you deal with the different levels in reverse, you're going to have different activity with different things that do occur with a person.
Once you've done this and you've stripped away these peels like an onion and you get down to it and you clean it out, how often are the people that were possessed left now mentally unbalanced and more, we always see in the movies, it's, oh, yeah, now she can go live a nice, happy life and the demon is gone. How often is it more likely that this person is just so mentally disturbed after having an episode like this that their life is never normal again?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, they never are. It's a very lengthy process. A
mm-hmm.
key factor that I always recommended these people getting involved with is they definitely need therapy. There's a big void within their lives.
Counselors out there, John, that you can go to and say, you know, I was possessed and I really need to work through this now, and they don't turn you into the loony bin?
There's quite a few out there today that will look at this openly.
Okay.
And they will try to work with an individual. Now, you have to remember, from the medical perspective, they're going to look at it, okay, this is a wounded person, and, you know, they went through a severe trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the way it's interpreted when I deal with psychologists and therapists. They look at this as a perspective. This person went through some type of serious issue, whether you want to look at it as possession or, you know, a trauma. This is the way they view it, which is fine, because they're still able, there's certain ones out there that can still help those individuals and talk to those individuals and be able to help them to move forward with their lives.
Okay, yeah, I just didn't know how people could actually go out there and, you know, I mean, you see psychiatrists that say, well, you know, we can help you with, overeating, smoking cessations, depression, getting over a past exorcism. I just never seen that advertised anywhere. And I would think that would cause more problems for people talking about something like that and opening up a whole new can of worms.
Well, here again, let's just take the Roman Catholic Church alone.
Mm-hmm.
They have a tremendous amount of psychologists, therapists, doctors that all intermingle and are part of the church that they go wherever their church is, they could have somebody they could recommend within that area.
You're right. I was totally blanking out the fact that the church has people that hired to do that as well. I was just thinking more in the general spectrum of doctors and you know, psychiatrists.
Here again, I could tell you now, several therapists that I've worked with, Dave, just through the Roman Catholic Church alone, they don't just take on patients that are Roman Catholic. They've dealt with a lot of people that I've recommended to them to be able to work with them, to talk to them, sit down and try and figure out some of the things that they can do to help their lives to move forward. Because here again, like I said, you have to remember from the medical field, they're looking at that as a major, major trauma that that individual went through.
Sure. You know, one of the recommendations from the people on the board, John, is for next time when you're trying to determine if it's an animal spirit or a human spirit or demonic, if you try to throw the ball but don't really throw it and it goes after it looking for it for a while, it's probably the dog spirit. They're just so dumb. I do that to my dogs all the time, too. But it was a good point.
The next time I'm at an exorcism, if I want to know, I'll toss a ball across
the street. Boy. Come on. Go get the ball. Where'd he go? Where'd the ball go? Now, see, that would be a good comedy, Lynn, right there. I want to see that in the next scary movie section. But now let's go back and say, you guys, you brought him out of this. How many exorcisms did this gentleman have to go through before he was cleared? Or is he still not cleared of this lycanthropy
possession? To my knowledge, Bill Ramsey had one exorcism performed, and he hasn't had any reoccurrences since. That's to the best of my knowledge.
All right. So he's pretty much living a clean life. Now, you said that you've worked in other cases of lycanthropy as well, correct?
Yes. Actually, there were two other ones where they definitely had felt that there was animal spirit that was intermingled with them. The same MO, same type of thing, where these individuals would reach a climax, if you will, when the full moon was out there, or... Here again, we do know scientifically when there's a full moon that it does alter everything.
Right.
I mean, this is a proven scientific fact.
Right.
So therefore, does it generate something in these individuals and they're convincing themselves that it's an animal spirit, but it's necessarily something on a demonic level? Good possibility.
Well, sure.
A very good possibility.
I mean, it's proven to affect water and the tides during a full moon. And
absolutely,
because we're basically a water-based creature, if your water levels are off and it's doing that and you have a brain chemical imbalance, I would guess that would be a much bigger chance of what's going on to these people as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you know, demonic possessions always seem to, you know, people invite them in through, as you've mentioned in the past, in your beliefs, through seeking the guidance of psychics or tarot card readers or playing with the Ouija board. You know, I mean, that seems to get the demonics in there. How do you get an animal possession into you? I mean, what are you doing that invites an animal to take over? And have you ever heard of any other cases of any other form of animal, a bird, you know, hawk, eagle, snake, any other type of possession that's taken over with a person, or does it always just seem to be a dog or a wolf?
No, it's very, very much strong belief system with the American Indian. From different people I've talked to, they believe that the hawk can take them over, the raven can take them over. I mean, there's several different animals that they believe can inhabit them. The bear, they believe can, you know, take them over. But here again, when studying a lot of these different things, I view it as its energy, whether it's a positive or a negative, is that what's entering this individual, and they feel that it's manifesting into a animal spirit. It's a possibility. They believe that so strongly. I mean, here again, you know, I've been around where there's been some ceremonies from Native American. I've seen some bizarre things. I haven't seen anybody fly around the room or anything, but, you know, or turn into a bear, but, you know.
But the night is young, John.
Yeah, well, the night is young, yeah. But you know what? Yeah, these people believe in these things, and we know the power of energy and what it can manipulate and what it can possibly do. Is that, do I believe it can convince that person 100% that they have the characteristics of an animal taking them over? Yes, because if they believe strongly enough in that, here again, my philosophy in looking at this from studying this from so many years on the different levels of what can possess a person, looking back at it as far as it being energy and manifesting as far as something on a negative level, absolutely, I do believe that does transpire.
All right. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest, John Zaffis. We'll be back more with John right after this.
I am Greenlock 6, and when I am in your galaxy, I listen to Dave and Tim on the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Do you love to travel? Do you love to explore the paranormal? Then join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show as we take our show on the road. January 14th and 17th, we'll be going to sunny Long Beach, California to investigate one of the top 5 haunted spots in the world, the Haunted Queen Mary. Joining us on our journey are the lovely ladies of TV's The Ghost Hunters, Donna McRoy and Lisa DeWall, paranormal investigator Patrick Burns from Court TV's hit new show, Haunting Evidence, and psychic-sensitive Chris Fleming from Dead Famous on the Biography Channel. Together, we'll explore the mysteries and history of this famous floating haunted playground. Joining us will be some other special guest speakers and authors. It's a great chance to meet others that are involved in the paranormal and share your interests. For more information and prices, visit our website at darknessradio.com, then click the Trips tab, then click on the Queen Mary. Remember to check back for information on upcoming trips as well. And tune in live each Sunday night to hear a new episode with Dave and Tim and their guests covering all aspects of the paranormal on the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
2006 is here, and for many of you, another year has passed without treating you and your loved ones to a much-needed getaway. Rocky Shores Resort has just what you're looking for. Join owners Jerry and Kim Pipp at their family-themed resort that offers a heated outdoor swimming pool, volleyball court, playground, spacious lodge with games and activities for the whole family and more. With 6, 2, and 3-bedroom cabins that are affordable, comfortable, and fully furnished, and 12 seasonal RV sites, Rocky Shores Resorts is perfect for a private escape or for a family reunion. The resort are located on the east shores of Bowstring Lake in the heart of the Chippewa National Forest. Here you can relax and enjoy nature in the Great North Woods, experience dozens of area attractions, and get hooked on some of the best northern perch, panfish, bass, and walleye fishing in northern Minnesota. Call 1-866-878-0101 to book reservations or check out their website at rockyshoresresort.com for more information. This year, don't ignore the call of the wild. Embrace it and enjoy yourselves. That number again is 1-866-878-0101. Rocky Shores Resort is open year-round. Call today.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Do you want to take charge of your life? We all have our demons we want to get rid of. This is Russ Clark. My Hypnosis CD series will help you take charge of your life and kick those demons out. Thousands of people have made personal improvements through the power of hypnosis. Your success is guaranteed by me, or I will refund 100% of your investment. To kick those demons or to add relaxation into your life, visit my website, www.powerhypnosis.net.
Mommy!
Leave me alone!
Do you have ghosts?
Do you have dreams?
Do you have an interest in the unknown? Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para-Investigators, the 24/7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
They're hardly beautiful, barely average. In fact, when they were both born, the doctor slapped their moms instead of them.
I will slap you so hard you end up in the main dynasty.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Hey, everybody. I want to take a quick minute to thank our good friend Russ Clark out there from PowerHypnosis.net. Russ hooked me up with a Insomnia CD and also a Self-Confidence CD, and I started listening to both of those quite a while back. I can tell you that it's definitely had a dramatic change in my life. Whenever I listen to the CD and I get myself on the regimen, my insomnia is gone. I felt my self-confidence boost. I'm not quite as intimidated being in and around larger groups of people and dealing with people. A lot of people think because I've got a radio show that I should have no problem talking in front of live people or being in front of a big group. I'm still frightened of that, but that has definitely started to wane since I've begun listening to these tapes and CDs. He covers a wide array of different problems, so if you need help with things like, you know, something as simple as quitting smoking or, insomnia, you know, learning how to relax and meditate, just trying to fix the problems that you have in your life, some of the weaknesses and you're looking to reinforce it, I would highly suggest getting in touch with Russ Clark at powerhypnosis.net. It's definitely going to be one of the best decisions you've made. And the thing I like most, all of his programs are very affordable and they're effective. You can get him in on CDs. You can also talk to Russ because he can help to accommodate you and get you a program that will work exactly with the problems that you seem to be having. So give Russ a call. Tell him that you heard it on Dave and Tim show here with Darkness on the Edge of Town. We're going to get back into our show now with our guest, John Zaffis. And John, before we get in too far, let's let people know how they can get in touch with you if they're having problems or questions. Where can they go to locate you on the internet?
Well, it's very easy to get me. Just put johnzaffis.com in and brings you to all my different websites. And I'm also joined the fan club of MySpace page.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you go to our MySpace page at Darkness Radio, John's right in our top friends list, so you can feel free to add him there. And he's a great guy. I'll be happy to add you as well.
Absolutely, and can definitely help you out going back and forth on that also.
Now,
John, very, very accessible.
One of the things that I wanted to mention to you when we were talking in the last bit, we were talking about animals taking over and the connections. There's a really great dramatization of this. I don't know if you remember from the 70s, there was a movie called The Other about the little boy and his twin brother who played a game with their Hungarian grandmother where they could, if they focused on a bird, they could begin to see through that bird's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they could feel the flight, and they could be a part of that bird. Now, that's actually taken from real beliefs and abilities that people have had, and you know, almost like a remote viewing, where they've been able to do that. Do you believe that it's that kind of connection, and you know, people that are Native American or people that are dabbling in these things, that could be those type of connections, which is opening up the door for an animal-type possession?
Absolutely. That isn't something you could rule out, because we know in an altered state, some people have the ability to be able to take themselves into such a deep meditation that they can actually believe that, you know, their physical body could be doing it. What I feel from studying a lot of this different stuff and getting involved with it is that the energy of the spirit from within the body, can it actually leave and actually, you know, travel around? I do believe that that does occur and does happen. So therefore, can a person basically put themselves in this meditative state where they actually feel that their physical body could possibly be doing this? You can't rule it out. But I do believe necessarily that, the spirit or the energy within us can and will leave and astral project all over the place, yeah.
Well, you know, that leads to a good question, too, that I had coming up here. We were talking about possession. We were talking about the possibility of a past life trying to impose itself on this life. With walk-ins, have you come across, while doing the work that you've done, have you come across somebody who may have been in a traumatic accident and their personality has dramatically changed to its, not just a mental problem, but it's like an entirely different person that is now running the ship, and that person is gone? It's not a possession, but like one soul has been released and a new soul has taken over.
With this, it's a phenomenal thing, because I study this very much in depth. When a person goes through a traumatic experience, now, we do know that the energy, spirit or soul, I always say all three so nobody gets upset, this does occur, where it does leave the body. Now, do other energies or can another spirit actually enter at that point in time? I do believe that this can happen. Now, scientifically, it's even proven out, and there's been a lot of studies done on this, that people that had near-death experiences, they're totally altered people. They're totally changed. And here again, with walk-ins, you can almost tie all this in together due to the parallels that do occur. So, yes, have I dealt with that? And I've studied it very much where people that claim that they're walked, you know, there's walk-ins, and you will find out that there was some type of a traumatic experience that could have occurred with this person, you can loop all this in together. And, you know, talking to people that this has happened, then talking to relatives and friends of these individuals, they'll tell you that it's a totally different person. They totally changed after they had this occur with them. And I tie this walk-ins, near-death experience, all these things loop into the same thing because the parallels are almost identical.
Now, do most of these creatures and spirits and malevolent beings that do possession, that try to take over the body, do you ever find a confident, happy, healthy, normal human being that is possessed? Is it ever one of those, or is it always a person that's fighting depression, fighting, anxiety, is weak, is an addictive spirit? It seems they're ripe for the picking, but it also seems they're ripe for more mental disturbances. Is that what gives the entities the easier access because they're weak? Or do you run into stronger personalities, strong people that have these exact same problems?
I deal with both, actually. I mean, we know people that have severe emotional problems. They're going to be more adapt to having these types of things happen. They're an easy catalyst. But I've also dealt with people that they just don't fit the pattern. There's no reason for these types of situations to occur with them. They're very strong individuals. Now, a lot of times people always will say that it's just religious people that become possessed. That's not necessarily truth. I've dealt with people that had absolutely no religious values whatsoever that have had these occurrences take place. They know there's something that has entered them. We're dealing with it. They've been to doctors, psychiatrists. Nobody can figure out exactly what's happening. Everybody's at a loss. Well, where do you go from there? Then when you're talking to these individuals and they start explaining the events to you, and you're going back and forth with different answers, and one thing I will do when I deal with a person that's like this, that there's no way they should have this issue. They should have never been possessed to begin with. They never got involved with anything. They don't believe in the devil. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they fell victim. Now, in a situation like that, one of the key things, once a tremendous amount of things are ruled out, I will recommend them to go for a blessing or go for an exorcism or a deliverance. What is it going to hurt? It's not going to hurt anything.
Right.
So therefore, when you see these individuals go through this and there's a dramatic difference in the individual, and you're sitting down and you're talking to them after they go through this, and you say, what do you feel transpired? And I always hear the same thing. They go, I don't believe in any of this stuff. I still can't believe I went through this, but something has changed. There was something with me, so I have to reevaluate what I thought. I don't necessarily believe that, you know, organized religion has anything to do with it, the devils or demons have anything to do with it, but yet it did something. Now, scientifically, I have to look at this from a perspective also. We do know that if the energies do get altered with an individual, one way or another, is that going to change what's happening with that individual? You have to look at all these things to try to understand what happens, how it transpires. So therefore, I always try to look at everything from the big perspective.
John, from the big perspective, the paranormal is on the rise. People's interest in the paranormal and finding other answers, finding other things out there is probably bigger than it's ever been. What can people do to safeguard themselves from any form of possession or attachment with a malevolent or evil or dark spirit? What can they do? We've got about 2 minutes left. What can you do to help people protect themselves and protect their families?
One of the key things to always do is you can learn to understand these things and learn what they're about without going in, having to conjure, play with the Ouija board, or get involved with practicing things and summoning things. Today, more so than anything, I tell people, you want to go to haunted locations, you want to try to get EVPs or pictures, that's cool, go for it. But you don't have to go in and start provoking. You don't have to do these types of things. And if you want to take it a step farther to learn these things and understand them, gain as much knowledge as you can. That's a key factor because, you know, knowledge is a big tool in our field. It helps you to understand these things. It helps you to say, okay, I might not necessarily believe in some of these things, but I have to look at the big picture to be able to understand these things. And I always tell people, I don't care if you worship a rock, as long as it's on a positive, bring in that positive force to help protect yourself. That is a key factor with 99% of this. Some type of positive reinforcement. A lot of people believe in the light. A lot of people believe in prayer. People believe in many different things to help protect themselves. And that's very essential and very important once you start going to haunted locations or you start doing research into the paranormal field.
All right, John. Well, thank you very much. As always, you're a gentleman and a scholar. I appreciate you spending time with us and sharing your stories with us. I hope we can have you again back in the future here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Have a good night, John. Thank you very much for listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Linda Godfrey, an author with the books The Beast of Bray Road and Hunting the American Werewolf. We'll be back with more of that right after this.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.